Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Tuesday. It's June 18th. 37 degrees currently here in Old Town Park City, 42 degrees in the Heber Valley. On the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Nate Larson. Good morning. It was a cold one.
Oh, yes, it was. Leslie, good morning. Yeah, hopefully everyone was able to cover their gardens, things that might get damaged with the frigid temperatures this morning. Glad we're above freezing. Temperatures this afternoon still being plagued with some colder air moving in from the north, just low 60s for highs in Park City, but at least the sun's going to be out. So wear layers, of course, as you step out with those cold temperatures this morning. Should be pretty pleasant by the afternoon. Heber will get up to upper 60s today, close to 70. Overnight lows once again in the mid to upper 30s, expecting some chilly temperatures, not quite cold enough to merit the freeze warning or watch, but certainly going to be chilly. And then temperatures rebounding tomorrow afternoon. So southwest flow is going to start to pick up, should allow for a quick warm-up. So mid-70s return on Wednesday, should be partly cloudy at times, just some high clouds streaming in from the southwest. Lots of sunshine and even warmer temperatures into Thursday. We're going to return back to the 80s for both Park City and for Heber, about 80 in Park City and 86 in Heber. We are going to start to see moisture increase, though, throughout the day on Thursday, especially to the east of Utah, so the eastern parts of the state, I should say. We're watching some monsoon moisture that's going to trickle into the southeast corner, but then spread northward into Friday. Could have a chance of showers and possibly some thunderstorms with highs near 80 degrees again on Friday. Overnight lows in the 50s. Moisture is going to clear out for the weekend, so our best shot of any shower activity will be on Friday, I think, for Park City and for Heber. After that, westerly flow should dry us out and keep our warming trend going. Saturday, we should be in the mid-80s to upper 80s into Sunday, with clear skies into Monday next week, and Heber will warm into the 90s by Sunday, low 90s, in fact, with mid-90s Monday, Tuesday next week as well.
Okay, that didn't take long. All right, thanks.
Yeah, you bet.
Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'll be checking in with Wasatch County Manager Justin Graybaugh. No Wasatch County Council meeting this week. Park City Board of Realtors CEO Jamie Johnson will be joined by this month's speaker series guest, Rochelle Raven of Natural Wisdom, talking about the self-love and care techniques. And finally, the co-founders of Park City Opera, Liesl Wangerman and Lena Goldman, announcing the opening of their inaugural season. And taking a look at some local news now, the Military Installation Development Authority says its partnering entities, such as Wasatch County and the Wasatch County School District, will start seeing significant payoff for their agreements with MIDA in the coming years. KPCW's Grace Dorfler has more on that.
MIDA is a state agency made up of appointed, not elected officials. It was formed with the mission of serving members of the military, and it creates revenue for its programs by partnering with local government entities to invest in economic development projects. Much of MIDA's development in Wasatch County is part of Deer Valley's resort expansion project. MIDA Chief Financial Officer Paula Eldridge said during a board meeting June 11th, the biggest growth is expected in Wasatch County, the site of MIDA's military recreation facility. The project is expected to yield major growth in tax revenue over the next 5 years as construction projects reach completion.
What you are seeing is an exponential increase in growth, and it's just this beautiful upward arrow.
For fiscal year 2024, MIDA is distributing about $300,000 each to Wasatch County and the school district. The town of Hideout is getting an estimated $376,000. But 5 years from now, Eldridge estimates MIDA will give over $2 million in tax revenue back to the county and close to $3.5 million to the school district. Hideout should see around $1.3 million by fiscal year 2029. The Central Utah Water Conservancy District, Wasatch County Fire Protection Special Service District, and Wasatch County Special Service District No. 21 are also expected to have bumps in revenue as MIDA grows. MIDA Board Chair Senator Stuart Adams pointed out the impact of the county will largely come from secondary homeowners.
The interesting thing up here is that most of the impact is people are moving to this area will be buying second homes, and a very low impact on schools. So that's a significant revenue for both the county and the schools with less impact.
The discussion of revenue growth came amid a larger conversation about MIDA's budget for the coming fiscal year. MIDA plans on over $80 million in general fund expenditures next year, including spending over $31 million on Wasatch County's military recreation facility and about $6 million on the new Sundance project area in Utah County. That's down from almost $141 million in spending over the past year, when MIDA poured more than $95 million into its Wasatch County projects. Major aspects of the MRF are scheduled to open before the end of the calendar year, including a Grand Hyatt and some parts of Deer Valley's East Village expansion. Of the almost 1,400 new hotel rooms planned in the MRF, 100 are reserved for veterans and members of the military. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
Well, the Park City School District wants to limit the use of phones during school hours. KPCW's Parker Malatesta reports that the Board of Education will consider a new cell phone policy at its meeting tonight.
The new policy would prohibit students from using cell phones during school hours. It does include exceptions such as a health concern or for educational purposes. It would require students to keep phones out of sight in a secure place like a locker or backpack. It also outlines several disciplinary measures if students fail to comply. First would be a verbal warning, followed by placing the student's phone in the central office for the rest of the school day. In more severe cases, a conference would be scheduled with parents or guardians to discuss cell phone use. The school board will consider posting the new cell phone policy at its meeting Tuesday. New policies must be posted for 20 days to allow for public comment. Then the school board will consider officially adopting the new guidelines. The board could also move to adopt next year's $191 million budget, which marks an 11% increase from last year.
It includes an 8% property tax increase, which equates to a roughly $80 bump for a primary home with a $1.5 million valuation. If the school board moves forward with the tax increase, a truth in taxation hearing will be scheduled for August 20th. General public comment will be at 5 p.m. at Tuesday's board meeting, which is taking place at district offices on Kearns Boulevard. It'll also be streamed live on YouTube. The link can be found at kpcw.org. Parker Malatesta, KPCW News.
Well, teachers, administrators, and staff in the South Summit School District will all get a pay raise for the coming school year. The South Summit Board of Education approved those increases last week, and it also renewed contracts for the top district leaders for another 2 years. Both Superintendent Greg Mon and District Business Administrator Adam Robinson will see a 4% increase in their salaries. Mon will earn just over $188,000 plus benefit, as well as a monthly $675 vehicle stipend. Robinson's pay will increase to just over $157,000 plus benefits. Raises for teachers and school staff will also be at 4%. Mon says the head custodian will see a bigger raise to bring his position up to market rate.
One of the items in our board's strategic plan is to be in the top 10% as far as compensation packages, because for South Summit, to attract someone from outside of the South Summit school district boundary, someone's driving through at least one, if not two or three or more school districts.
Superintendent says that hiring for the 2024-25 school year has gone exceptionally well and that all teaching positions have been filled. The school board voted to delay a discussion on building affordable housing for district employees until the July 11th meeting. The board has approved spending $500,000 in next year's budget to begin to build the infrastructure for an affordable housing project on school district property. The district has asked its attorneys to answer several deed restriction questions, including whether an employee who leaves education would be required to move from that housing. Mon says the proposal is to build between 11 and 13 units as a means of attracting and retaining staff, especially teachers.
It is an investment, and so we take that really seriously, because really what we're there for is to invest in kids.
Right.
And some may say that's not investing in kids, but I would also say investing in having the best teachers and best staff is investing in kids.
According to Mon, because there are not many examples of district-funded affordable housing, the school board is taking it slow so that they can get it right. On the phone now with an update from Wasatch County is Manager Dustin Graybow. Good morning, Dustin.
Good morning, Leslie.
So we've got the Juneteenth holiday. The county, I believe, took yesterday as the Juneteenth holiday?
That's correct.
Okay, so no council meeting tomorrow, though?
No, just due to the primary elections, we're using our administrative offices to manage those.
Okay. So without a meeting to review, then let's kind of catch up on some other topics. We've got a story about the money that MIDA is handing out to the taxing agencies. Certainly Wasatch County, the Wasatch County School Board are some of those. Sounds like Wasatch County will see about $300,000 this year. Any idea what it would have been if MIDA wasn't involved?
Well, I think there's a decent argument to be made that there might not be much because many of the projects there are being done with the incentives provided by MIDA. So it's a tough thing to say how much would have taken place had MIDA not been involved, had those incentives not been offered. But I think a good counter argument is that there have been ski resorts talked about in that area for close to 50 years. And now we're actually seeing things happen. So I think it's a transition period, but that those numbers are going to quickly change. And I think we're excited about the funding that is going to come from that area and really benefit the entirety of Wasatch County.
Yeah, I want to talk about that in just a minute, though. But I was curious, why would Hideout get more money than the county? Because the numbers we're reporting is that Hideout's supposed to get about $376,000 compared to Wasatch County's $300,000.
You know, we aren't a party to Hideout's agreement with MIDA. I know that part of that is because Hideout's developments were further along in the process than some of the ones in other portions of the Wasatch County sections of the MIDA project area, and that a big portion of the revenues that those things generate are not just from the property taxes, but from other sales and use taxes generated in those areas. So if there are residents there, they're spending more money, charging municipal energy taxes and things like that.
All right. And then in 5 years, it's estimated that Wasatch County is going to see more than $2 million come to its coffers. And this doling out of property tax revenues goes on then for about another 35 years or so. Then what? I mean, then you'll have this huge, you won't be in charge, but you'll have this huge windfall of tax dollars. Can the county bond against those revenues now?
I mean, it would be a novel approach to bond far out. Typically, we only bond for something in the 20-year range. And usually bond holders want to be repaid at least partially over time. So I think it's unlikely that we would do something like that. But yeah, there is a really big change coming out in that distant future. Some of that will come on not all at once, but gradually as the projects complete that 40-year increment. It'll be whatever started, you know, this year would be 40 years from now, and whatever happens 5 years from now would be 40 years from then.
Okay, so what will taxpayers then see over time? Will they see a lowering of the tax rate as more of those revenues come into the county's coffers?
I certainly think that's a possibility. What I think is very certain is that we won't be having to go back to property taxpayers to provide the level of service that we want to, largely because of this. I know the current council is interested in looking at reducing property tax payments, but a lot of that will just come down to the details of funding and what the needs are and how they want to balance the requests from the public for services versus the revenues that we're bringing in from these areas. But I think it's an exciting opportunity that we can even have that type of discussion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and my understanding is that projects that come into the MIDA project area then submit their projects that they'd like help with MIDA to finance. Is there some kind of priority list that exists that the public has access to?
Yes and no. Our agreements with MIDA outline a specific waterfall, is what it's referred to, of priorities of funding for public projects. And those include things like public parking and public facilities. And these are a portion of the funds that are going to these earmarked specifically for the public infrastructure investments. But when a project participates in the tax increment financing, they do receive infrastructure reimbursements for their portion of the project in addition to those projects. So some of that money comes back to the property developers. That's the incentive for them to build at the scale and the quality that they're currently building. And then what is happening after that is we're getting additional funds from the other portions of the increment to pay for those other public infrastructures.
All right. So Wasatch County does have some kind of list that they hope get funded first. And I guess where is that list?
It's in our interlocal agreement. We amended it last year, and so I'd have to pull up the details to go through it, but it outlines which projects are in which priority, and there are a number of them there. One of the ones that we're currently talking about is $2 million earmarked specifically for a public facility in there that we're expecting to be a co-located MIDA Wasatch County public facility to do things like provide some office space, meeting space, and maybe some salt storage for public works facilities.
All right. Can any of that money then be used for some kind of transit facilities?
I think we do expect the day skier parking that is going to be there to be a shared use facility also for transit. There is a lot of opportunity there. I think it will continue to be something that we'll need to identify additional funds for as well.
All right. Tomorrow afternoon, there's a MIDA DRC, I think it's the Design Review Committee meeting. You sit on that board. Any idea what sort of MIDA developments will be discussed then?
Yeah, one of the bigger projects on there is there's a set of condos along kind of the southeast side of the project area. They have gone through a few changes right now in that it has a plaza that has been reoriented to face towards the mountain. And so it's a pretty big development. I believe it's close to 350 condo units that also has mixed-use commercial on the ground floor, but as it kind of cascades down the mountainside.
So how does that work? It goes first to this design review committee and then signed off there, and then does it come back to Wasatch County's Planning Commission?
So for the items that are in the MIDA control area, and these are mostly things that are on the west of Highway 40, MIDA's board becomes the land use authority there. So Wasatch County, we have our input and rotation on that DRC meeting. So I myself am on there. Our planning director, Doug Smith, is on there. We have citizens at large from Wasatch County, as well as our economic development and tourism director. And so we provide input at the DRC level. And then once a project gets a recommendation from the DRC, it advances to MIDA's board, which also Wasatch County has a seat on the board, in addition to some other state and local authorities.
Okay. The Marina West property, is that, this I believe is where the workforce housing is supposed to go. What else is being planned on that east side of the highway?
There is a parcel a little bit further north, closer to where the fire station is, that expected to have some type of residential, or excuse me, commercial use in addition to residential. And for that piece further south by the Mayflower Interchange, we have talked about doing some recreation amenities on top of some of the tailings there, in addition to public parking. There is affordable housing, and actually, I know MIDA is working with the school district to identify opportunities to provide access to a parcel there that the school district owns that's anticipated maybe to be an elementary school at some point in the future.
Okay. And then there's also three Sky Ridge projects on the planning committee agenda. This will come back to the county council next week?
Yes, some of them will. Some of them will be just final reviews by the planning committee there. These are mostly what they're looking at doing is making some changes to the Golf Academy, as well as they have some larger estate lots on kind of the far north and closer to Hideout that are going through the entitlement and approval process.
Okay, that Golf Academy, it was, I think, just going to be a three-hole executive course, so very short, but they're adding quite a bit more to that now, huh?
Yeah, it's a pretty novel facility. It's intended to have a really diverse way of utilizing it so that you can tee off from multiple locations, and I think they're trying to make it a more entertainment-oriented facility. I know that they have a driving range that's going to have some technology implemented into it, so it will have both summer and winter activities available. And I know that they're trying to integrate that into all of their services. And that is a public facility that'll be available to anyone, not just, you know, HOA owners in that area.
All right. Also next week, the Wasatch County Council is scheduled to discuss the Trails, Arts and Parks tax dollars. How much money are we talking about this year?
The TAP board decided to allocate, this is based on the money that we've gained from last year through year to date, about $375,000 of projects. We received about $455,000 of requests, and right now we're going through the evaluation process and hope to make the decision by this Friday on which of those projects and how much of those projects, if there are portions that align better with our priorities than others. We might partially fund some of them, but there are trail maintenance projects and arts projects. And I think a lot of things that we're really excited to be in a position to fund.
Okay. And why did the county decide to go forward with a tap board as opposed to a wrap? I mean, what you've narrowed the recreation portion down to specifically trails?
So we have one of the grants that's being worked is pavilions at one of our parks. And so there's not an intent to really limit it. What I think it was is a really explicit emphasis on the priority that trails play in our community. When we first started talking about this, one of the things that we saw was the new Provo River Trail that is maybe under construction by UDOT through Provo Canyon. And our understanding was that Wasatch County was going to have a responsibility to maintain it. Rather than going back to property taxpayers, the council decided to put it to voters to identify an additional funding source for maintenance. Now, because that trail's been delayed, we don't have that maintenance responsibility at the moment, so we're able to fund some of these other one-time projects, knowing that we will have this funding source available. And the intent has been from the beginning, really, to use it for trail projects. And so I think it adds a level of clarity. But like I said, we aren't intending to really limit it. It's just a communication effort.
Yeah. So is the board setting aside then a little bit of money then every year just in anticipation of the maintenance that will need to be done once it gets finished?
So this year we have not decided to do that. Part of it is because we think we're a couple years away from actually having those responsibilities. Mm-hmm. And one of the nice things about getting new trails built by an outside entity is that initially those trails don't require a lot of maintenance. So we have a little bit of a runway to prepare for it. So once we have a better sense of what those responsibilities will be, and a complicating factor in that, and it's a good complication, is the Utah Trail Network has identified sections of this trail to be part of that. What that means, they're still trying to figure out. I think that there is still a role that Wasatch County will play in it, but it's also possible that the state and will be more involved in the maintenance and construction of the other portions of those trails, which we're pretty excited about as well.
Yeah. Wanted to ask you a little bit about the Summit County's council plan to build a crash gate on 200 South. As you know, that this is the kind of the back way into Toohey and the Wakara development based in Wasatch County. Any response to that decision?
I think we do have some residents that are concerned about access. Toohey, this is one of their accesses for Wakara. It's one of their primary accesses. And so they have expressed some concern. I think I said last time when I spoke to Connor that just because someone's across the county line doesn't mean that we don't care about them. So we are sensitive to the needs of residents on the Summit County side of that line. I think Summit County also feels the same. And I think we're all just trying to figure out what the best path forward is here. So we're willing to work with them to see, you know, if there are solutions other than a crash gate. And ultimately, I don't think it's up to Wasatch County on what Summit County decides to do with their road. And, you know, it will be up to those decision makers on that process.
Yeah, and it's not like Summit County is blocking anyone's access. There are front door accesses to both of these developments, yeah?
So the Wakara project doesn't actually access through Toohey off of 248. They've been using this road as their primary access. So that's mostly where their concern is coming from. And I believe it's possible that there are some other accesses that are maybe less improved than this 200 South road.
So, I mean, is that something that Wakara maybe need to consider then, building its own front access, not using 200 South?
Yeah, I think that will be something that we'll have to discuss. I know that they were present at the meeting and I think expressed some concern. So again, I think we're all still trying to figure out the details of how this all would work and what the options are. We have not yet looked at any specific alternatives to that development on how it might access. And again, I emphasized before, and I feel very much the same now, that ultimately our goal with access is safety, that we want to make sure that if there are residents, they can get in and out of them, and that a crash gate, I think, helps accommodate those emergency accesses when it's really critical. I know that it's the property owners that are more concerned about the casual access and making sure that they can you know, get to and from their property on a regular basis. And that's something that we generally try to facilitate.
Okay. Anything else, Dustin, you wanted to mention?
Not this morning.
All right. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
That's Wasatch County Manager Dustin Graybaugh. Well, the Park City Board of Realtors continues with this year's speaker series next week, featuring Rochelle Raven, who joins me on the phone in the studio with me. I have the CEO of the Board of Realtors, Jamie Johnson. Good morning, both of you.
Good morning, Leslie.
Good morning. How are you?
Doing great, Rochelle. Thanks. So, Jamie, let's have you just give us the basics, where, when, and where and how much?
Yes, absolutely. So this year, our speaker series, once again, is called Peace, Love, and Rock and Roll. And the first one was held back a few months ago. The second one is next Thursday, June 27th at 5:30 p.m. at Eccles here in Park City. We still have plenty of seats available, as it will seat 1,200. So we would love for the entire community to come out and join us. So the second part of the series, being about love, is, again, the topic of self-love and care techniques. And we all obviously need a little more of that in our lives. I know my therapist tells me all the time that I'm the hardest on myself, more so than anybody else in my life. And so we have employed Rochelle Raven, who I actually got the pleasure of knowing through Leadership 28 class, as well as Leslie was in our class. And she just is going to bring a different perspective and a lot of techniques and tools that we can hopefully use to help us love ourselves better.
Okay, well, Rochelle, tell us a little bit about yourself and the work you do.
Hi, well, I'm a transformational life coach, and I specialize in helping people navigate life transitions, also known as life crises, and to create life that feels more true and authentic and full of joy, so to create more more fulfillment and satisfaction. So,
all right. Well, what are some of the things you'll be sharing then with the participants next Thursday?
Well, like Jamie was saying, we are so hard on ourselves, and we get into this trap of thinking that we need to be a certain way, that we're going to wait until we're perfect to be happy, and we build a life around what we're supposed to do and pleasing others. And so what we're going to be talking about is how to start creating from what we would really love, and to pay attention to what we would love, and that makes us feel alive, and like tools to come back to what is authentic, and giving ourselves permission to be true to who we really are, and daily things that we can do to give ourselves credit, to notice what's going well, and just to bring in more fun and pleasure, to hold life more lightly, let's say.
So is this going to be more of a lecture, or is it something that participants will actually participate in, some exercises or something that you've got?
Yeah, there will be exercises, and I'll be sharing tools to do right in the moment that we can, you know, feel how that feels different. I'll be sharing a lot about how I came to do this work, that I was such a people pleaser, and perfectionism was like my middle name, you know, and being so hard on myself, and then having life really fall apart, you know, everything that I thought, you know, life just all of a sudden kind of blew up, and everything that I had relied on before, and just took as being totally true, and this is the way life was and how it was going to go, everything shifted in a very short window of time, and I got to really take a step back and start creating from zero. And so I want to share that process and what that looked like for me. And I've been coaching people for 15 years as a life coach. And before that, I ran a sales team and helped people create their kind of dream life, and identifying the, you know, what was important to them and how to get there. And so that's what we'll be going through is, you know, I'm sure a lot of people will resonate with this idea of you're creating life, you think it's going to go one way, and then something happens. It's very inconvenient when, you know, you have a diagnosis or a faith crisis or just a midlife crisis when maybe you have an empty nest and all of a sudden what's next. So we'll get to look at that and give ourselves credit for how far we've come, but start to take steps for what do we really love, rather than being afraid of trying. Like, how can we tap into what would light us up and remember those times when we felt really alive, and get some permission and baby steps to create that.
Okay. Again. So, Jamie, why was this a topic you thought important?
Well, I think mental health obviously is something that we was heightened back during the COVID era, and we have seen a lot of time, money, and resources go into this, and it's something that's vitally important in our community to make sure that we are all in a good space for mental health. And I know for myself, I think about like what Rochelle was just talking about. We have a lot of pressures from society and expectations that are put on us as humans, and sometimes we don't do what lights us up or what makes us feel more alive, and because we're afraid of how that will be perceived or what someone might think. And so I think it's just a great topic that we can, bring people in from the community and allow them to learn some things that would help them.
All right. And so you're doing this for the community as opposed to your realtors.
Absolutely. So this speaker series was long before I ever came here, 6 years ago. They had been doing a speaker series, and during COVID, obviously, it shut down for a little bit, and we brought it back last year and then this year again. And really do want to open it up for the community at large to come together and to learn together. And again, we do promote it through our membership, but we also promote it with KPCW, the Park Record, the Salt Lake Tribune. You can find information about it on Eventbrite or also on our website, and register for it through Eventbrite or even call our office to do that.
So you do want people to register?
You can. You don't have to. You can show up if it's a last minute and you're having, dinner over at the Boneyard and you decide you want to have something else to do for the evening, come on over. We would love to have you. You don't have to register, but if you would like to, you can do that as well.
Okay. You haven't announced who the final speaker will be.
We have not yet. So that is still being held closely, because that is something that we're still nailing down some of the contract information about. So.
Okay. And when you talk about rock and roll, are we going to have like rock and roll music or something?
That is the plan. So we're looking at an individual who would bring forth the topic of how we show up like a rock star in our lives on a daily basis, and having confidence, but with humility in everything that we do. So that's the last piece of how we can better ourselves.
Okay. Do you have a date set for that?
We do. And I have that right here on my phone, and it is September 26th.
Okay. Again at the Eccles
at 5:30 p.m.
Okay, before I let you go, you had a fundraiser, kind of a joint fundraiser between yourself and Habitat for Humanity. How did that go?
Yes, absolutely. It was this past Saturday evening, and it was the two events put together, so our Hats Off to Housing event that we've been doing for the last 3 years, as well as the Habitat for Humanity overall ball. And so this year, the Board of Realtors wanted to support Habitat's efforts, and we combined and did that over at the Legacy Lodge with a nice grant from Epic Promise that helped Habitat to put that event on. We had a full room, and it was great to see community partners like the Chamber and Park City Municipal, Deer Valley, others that all joined in and helped for the evening. We had a great auction, live auction, silent auction. So actually, I talked to Shelley yesterday afternoon, and they're still wrapping up the numbers on that, but it did appear as though they were able to raise a significant amount of money that evening.
Okay, and so it all goes to Habitat.
Correct, this year. So the last 2 years, the Board of Realtors supported HOPA and Mountainlands Community Housing Trust project with Holiday Village and Parkside Apartments and the revitalization of that. And then this year, we decided to move the efforts over to another amazing nonprofit in our community that's working towards affordable housing, as we know that that is such a critical point in our community right now that we need to get behind, and we need to find more ways for the people who work here and want to live here to have that availability.
Okay, and of course, we have talked in the past just about the whole thing going on with the commission litigation. You're telling me so much is still up in the air. We don't really know anything until what, later this summer? Or?
Yeah, so, you know, they do the with the National Association of Realtors did come to a settlement agreement for the litigation that is out there. There are some policy changes that will come to our multiple listing service, and those are set right now to take place in August. But there are also other pieces or factors that are coming into play right now with the Department of Justice looking at those issues as well. So it could change. This week, actually, we did receive a notice that the Department of Justice is looking at that on the 20th and 21st of June. And again, it may alter the way that we are still able to offer compensation through that process of selling and transacting real estate. So more to come, but yeah, it's still a little bit in limbo.
So does it remain in place, intact, as is it status quo at this point, I guess?
Well, we're starting to see agents that are removing that offer of compensation from the multiple listing service, which is what the settlement did require. So as of, I think it's August 17th is the date, that by that date, all MLSs across the country that are participants of the National Association of Realtors would have to remove the offer of compensation from the multiple listing service. That does not mean that with the settlement that they could not still offer compensation, that a buyer or seller could not have that responsibility, but it does mean that it cannot be a requirement to have something in the multiple listing service for that. So that, again, more information to come. As I have more updates, I'll definitely keep you posted.
Okay, maybe when we get the second quarter stat report, then
absolutely.
We'll know more.
Absolutely.
Okay, Rochelle, anything else you wanted to add?
Oh, I just want to encourage people to come and remember what life could look like if it were fun. Like what, we give kids permission to play and explore, make mistakes, and I just would love people to come and give themselves permission to create something that would be that would feel even better. So come and have a night of giving yourself permission to play and to reevaluate and bring some things into your life that would feel really good, and rather than just be so hard on ourselves. It'll be a fun night.
Okay, Rochelle, thanks. Jamie?
Yes, I was just going to say I'm going to challenge all of our leadership 28 class to be there on the 27th to support Rochelle and to hear about it, as well as any other leadership class here in Park City to participate.
Okay, Jamie, Rochelle, thanks so much for your time
this
morning.
Thank you, Leslie.
Well, for the first time, I believe, Park City now has an opera company. Lisa Wangerman and Lena Goldman co-founded Park City Opera. Their inaugural season begins tonight. They both join me now in the studio. Good morning. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, thank you.
So, Lena, you actually serve as the executive director of Park City Opera. Maybe you can just talk to us a little bit about how all of this came about.
Absolutely. So back in 2020, I was an intern for the Park City Arts Council, and I was working on arts advocacy on behalf of several arts organizations in town. And there's such a vibrant culture around attending live music and arts events here. And we really felt that opera was missing from that mix. And so the idea was to found a new nonprofit organization, which we did back in March of this year, that is dedicated to bringing live opera performances to our community.
Okay. And then, Liesl, you have a third person, actually, that you co-founded this.
Yes.
You talk to us a little bit about how you're part of that.
Yeah, so Lena had this great idea to bring opera to Park City, and I also have some arts administration background and experience, and Ben really brings the musical know-how to creating opera. So I think we're a really strong team that really balance each other out. And we met together as undergraduates at Yale, so.
Okay, and that third person is Ben Beckman.
Yes.
Do y'all live here in the Summit County area, or?
My family is based here, yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yes, and I'm currently finishing an artist diploma in Cleveland, and Ben is starting his master's at USC.
Okay. All right, so do you all sing?
Absolutely.
Yes, definitely.
Liesl and I are both sopranos.
Okay.
Yes.
And Ben, does he sing as well?
A little bit. He plays the piano and conducts and also composes.
All right. Well, I guess why did you think that Park City needed an opera company? And it can't be easy. And I say that is because we even saw in a big, you know, the Salt Lake metropolitan area where the opera and the symphony had to merge just to make things work. So why do you think it can work here?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that one thing I noticed during the COVID pandemic was just an influx of people to Park City from major cities in the United States who, for example, make attending opera in New York, in San Francisco, in Florida, part of their routine already. I also really am of the firm belief that every town should have a local opera company. It's really an art form that, despite being centuries old, is really relevant to our culture today. And so part of our goal is to just reintroduce opera in a way that feels accessible, that feels casual. We're planning to do it in unconventional and outdoor venues, places that people already are used to going while they're about their day, and really to bring opera to Park City in that way.
Yeah, you say unconventional. So what does that mean? Does it mean we'll hear it in English?
Oh, absolutely. So this summer, we're putting on a series of 14 performances around town, starting tonight at the library on the patio outside, but continuing through the end of August. And we will perform opera in English as well as song and opera in Italian, German, Czech, Russian, Spanish, and other languages. But what I mean by unconventional venues is just that we plan to reimagine what opera can be in the absence of an opera house. Obviously, Park City doesn't have an opera house formally anymore, not since it burned down in the late 1800s. And so we're bringing opera to art galleries on Main Street, to the patio outside the library, to different churches and temples around town, parks, anywhere that can support music happening.
Yeah, so where does the funding come to make this happen? Because I think like tonight's performance is free, right?
It is, and so many of our performances are free and open to the public this summer. We do have some ticketed events, which will generate a portion of our revenue, but like many arts nonprofits, we are relying on individual giving as well as future grant funding.
Okay, and do you have some opera supporters in the Park City area?
We do.
Yes, the response that we've received has been so supportive and positive. It's been really, really encouraging.
All right, well, how big of a company do you have? Because, right, you've got to have at least four singers, right?
Absolutely. So for this summer, Liesl and I will be singing, and then we've hired some guest artists as well from the area. So we will have a group of singers as well as Ben playing the piano. But what we're doing this summer is not representative necessarily of what we hope to do moving forward, which is to put on a full opera production. And so part of what we're doing this summer is with these series of performances is just letting locals know that we exist and that we're here with the goal of building an audience for a full production with orchestra in summer 2025.
Yeah. So are all of the singers, I mean, considered professional?
Absolutely.
Yes. I think many of us are just at the beginning of our professional career, but with the goal of being professional paid singers, not volunteer, not for fun. People who have studied this and have dedicated many, many hours and years of their life to this art form.
Yeah, and certainly we have singers and then we have opera singers. I mean, Liesl, you're young. I mean, how was it that you became interested in something that, you know, it's kind of old and, you know, for old folks?
Yeah, so growing up, my parents loved opera and would take my sister and myself to an opera once a year. And it was usually one of the classics like Tosca or Carmen. And at the time, I didn't really have such a strong interest in it. But I did really love to sing, and I especially love musical theater. So for high school, I ended up auditioning and getting into an arts high school in Dallas, where I grew up. And as part of the voice program, they had a really strong opera group. And all the cool kids, I know that sounds crazy, but all the cool kids did opera. And they really inspired me. And once I got into the art form, I realized that I had an affinity and a knack for it. And I got hooked. And so I just kept on studying and I just can't really imagine my life doing anything else.
Yeah. And of course, we've got the a cappella group, Park City Troublemakers, in town. How is opera different from something like that? Or is it the same?
Absolutely. At its core, opera involves instruments. And so something that we really love about opera is just that it's such a massive collaborative effort. So in addition to the singers, the opera singers, we also have the orchestra, the conductor, and then of course all of the set pieces. We have the stage director, the set design, the costumes, and all of those elements make opera different, for example, from a cappella.
Okay, just a quick note, we've got a major backup, it sounds like, Interstate 80 eastbound to US 40, backed up to the Kimball Junction exit. At this point, don't know if there is an accident or what's happening, but if you do know, you can text us at 435-655-8255. So, where do you guys practice?
Say that again?
Where do you practice?
Oh, just at my home right now.
Okay.
Yes. And then, of course, we do sound checks at all of the venues before we host performances. But tonight we'll be at the Park City Library. Tomorrow we'll be at Trove Gallery on Main Street. And then as we move towards the end of the week and Friday, we're planning a performance at Our Lady of the Snows in Alta. And then this Saturday we'll be at Park Meadows Country Club back here in Park City.
Okay. So opening night, as you mentioned, tonight, what are you going to be performing at the library?
So our program is called A Little Bit of Magic, and it features songs and arias about magic and fairies and faraway lands. So it's really, really family friendly, and all songs, even if they're not in English, will be introduced with a little description about what the song is about. So really accessible. And the songs that I'm performing are some of my favorites. So I'm really looking forward to it.
Okay. What are those? What are some of your favorites?
I'm singing Yukali by Kurt Vile, which is kind of cabaret. So we're doing a little bit of crossover also. And, you know, something I want to say about opera is that, you know, people have this idea of it as being really stodgy and heavy and long, and that isn't what it has to be. And we're really excited about creating opera that is relevant and fits people living today.
Yeah, so an incredibly robust schedule for this summer. And you've got a great website that people can get more information, just parkcityopera.org. Anything else you wanted to tell us about?
Thank you for having us. We really have been overwhelmed by the warm reception from the community so far. And we can't wait to meet you all this week. We hope that you come out to some of our free and public performances. And we really look forward to not just performing for you, but to meeting you and having conversations with you.
Yeah, so come this winter then, I mean, would you like be looking at places like the Eccles Center or?
So right now we're planning just a summer concert series. And so we have performances through August. And then the goal is to fundraise and build an audience for next summer when we would do that full production of an opera with orchestra. But from there, I anticipate that we'll scale in different ways. And perhaps we can introduce a short winter series as well.
Okay. Lena and Liesl, thanks so much for your time this morning. Good luck.
Thank you.
Thank you.